KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting Bang on a Can All-Stars performing works by Ruichi Sakamoto on November 13th at UC San Diego. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
Welcome in San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, voters spoke on Prop 50, and California will redraw its congressional maps, the message being sent to the nation. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. In case you haven't heard, Prop 50 passed last night by a lot. The measure will redraw the state's congressional districts to hand more seats to Democrats and counter Republican moves in Texas. California Governor Gavin Newsom called the victory a win, not just for Democrats, but for the United States.
We're proud. We're proud here in California to be part of this narrative this evening. We're proud of the work that the people of the state of California did tonight to send a powerful message to an historic president. Donald Trump is an historic president. He is the most historically unpopular president in modern history. In every critical category, Donald Trump is underwater.
Well, reactions are pouring in from Democrats and California Republicans who filed a federal lawsuit this morning. Joining me now is Scott Schaefer. He's senior editor with the Politics and Government Desk at KQED in San Francisco. Scott, welcome.
Thanks for asking me. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. Big night for you, I'm sure. How you feeling today?
How am I feeling? Probably not as good as Gavin Newsom is feeling.
Right.
He had a resounding victory and taking his victory laps, and his national star is clearly on the rise.
Exactly. Well, I guess I want to start with those election results that have him on his high, at least. Break down the numbers for me. How much did Prop 50 pass by?
It was overwhelming. It was about a 64% yes vote. The Associated Press called the race almost immediately after the polls closed. And if you look at the county results down your way in San Diego, it was a 61% yes vote. Orange County, which is often kind of a bellwether county for California, fairly purple, 55% yes. Even Riverside County, where they have a pretty conservative sheriff, for example, Chad Bianco, who's running for governor, 56% yes. And then, of course, the big counties like L.A., which has about a quarter of the voters, 73% yes. So, it broke down very much the way you kind of thought it would if you were a Democrat. In other words, the counties where Trump is least popular were the biggest yes vote for Proposition 50. But anyway, you slice it, it's really a very resounding victory. And I should say, when this was first put on the ballot by the legislature and the governor, it was not at all clear that this was going to pass. Mm-hmm. It's a complicated kind of an issue, but they were able to boil it down to simply Trump. If you want to stop Trump, if you want to, to kind of throw some sand in his gears, this is the way to do it. And that message really resonated.
Yeah, sounds like it was that message across the board. How did turnout compare to other special elections?
Well, we're still, there's still a lot of ballots to be counted, so we won't know probably till, the end of the week. But it was pretty healthy. There were, I think, over 7 million people voting. Now, that's not as high as a presidential election. But for a single issue on the ballot, there was incredibly high awareness. Pre-election polling showed that, upwards of 80% of Californians were paying attention and thought it was an important issue, no matter how they voted. And that's really unusual to have just one thing on the ballot. It's sort of like the recall of Gavin Newsom a few years ago, where that was the only thing on the ballot. And, the turnout there was also pretty high because voters were engaged on both sides of that question. So, I think for an off-year election that no one really saw coming 4 months ago, the turnout was quite good.
Right. And for an issue rather than a person, there was no name on the ballot, but this issue was. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it was the first. I mean, Trump, of course, is deeply unpopular in California. And this was the first opportunity that Democrats and others, no party preference voters, had to really register in a big way, in a national voice kind of way, their displeasure with the Trump administration's agenda. We've seen some big rallies, the No Kings rallies earlier in the year. But I think that this is the first time voters have been able to go cast a ballot and register their discontent with the direction of the country.
Well, yesterday we spoke briefly about election monitors in several California counties. How did voting go over yesterday? I mean, were there any issues reported?
Not that I heard. I mean, there were counter monitors, you know, so the Department of Justice federal monitors were there. But, you know, there was a lot of bluster behind that from the president. But, you know, they don't really have the authority to go into, you know, a vote center or a registrar's office and look at things. You know, they can do what any other citizen can do, which is keep an eye on things, kind of, you know, look and see whether, you know, voters are being prevented from voting or intimidated from voting. But, you know, there was nothing really in the way of, you know, challenging anybody on the spot that they could do. And so I think that, you know, it was maybe a bit of an intimidation tactic, especially for Latino voters who have been so concerned about ICE raids and deportations, to sort of send a message like, hey, if you go to the polls and vote, you know, you could be subject to arrest or detention, some kind of thing. But clearly that didn't work. And it wasn't just people voting by mail. I mean, there were long lines at polling places as the polls were closing last night around 8 o'clock, even in Los Angeles. So people clearly wanted their voice to be heard.
Right. Well, I want to talk about some of the reactions from major political figures. As we just heard, Newsom called on other states to redraw their districts, too. What stood out to you from his remarks last night?
Well, you know, it was very somber. You know, oftentimes when a politician is celebrating a victory, you'll have a big crowd. There'll be confetti. There'll be signs. There'll be music. There was none of that. He was standing in the backyard of the California Democratic Party headquarters in Sacramento. I think only journalists were present. There was no cheering. So it was a pretty somber message. And I think one that was geared toward a national audience. Which, of course, you know, as he celebrated the victory, it just reinforced the notion that he is a leading candidate for president in 2028. Unofficially, he hasn't announced yet. But I think that was really where the message was coming from, that California is weighing in on this national issue, expressing displeasure with the Trump administration, and we're going to do what we can to kind of stymie his agenda in the 2026 midterm elections by trying to flip, you know, as many as 5 congressional seats from red to blue here in California.
Mm. A boost, though, for his political future nonetheless.
Oh, no question. I mean, even before last night, you know, Democrats have been frustrated. The Democratic brand is not having a great season until last night. You know, there was a lot of displeasure with, you know, the way some of the national leaders like Senate leader Chuck Schumer from New York or Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, that they were too timid. You know, even looking at, say, the New York City mayor's race, where the Democratic nominee Zoran Mamdani wasn't endorsed by Schumer until the very last minute. I think Hakeem Jeffries never endorsed him. And so I think that there is a fervor among Democrats to see fight, you know, to see candidates really take, or elected officials take it to Trump. And certainly Gavin Newsom, since June, when Trump federalized the National Guard and sent some troops along with Marines down to L.A., he has really been at the tip of the spear and a leading voice, along with some other governors. But he's just, you know, been able through Prop 50 to really elevate that voice.
What reaction have we heard from the White House about Prop 50?
Well, you know, of course, you know, before the polls closed, the president was saying that the election was rigged and that there are, you know, investigations underway, criminal and otherwise. You know, again, I think there's a lot of bluster there, although the Republican Party in California today did file a lawsuit in federal district court in the central district of California, alleging that these districts were drawn To favor one race over another, violations, they claim, of the U.S. Constitution, the 14th and 15th Amendments. So that will play out in court. Whether there is any other additional federal action along these lines, we'll have to wait and see.
It'll be interesting to watch for sure. Here in San Diego, Republican Congressman Daryl Issa called the new law a partisan campaign to gerrymander the state. But Democratic San Diego Council member, Marnie Von Wilpert, who is campaigning to replace him, said the new maps will help preserve democracy. How does that rhetoric reflect what we're hearing statewide?
Well, I mean, Democrats, of course. I think there was initially some, hesitation or mixed feelings about redrawing the maps in the middle of the decade. In general, the Citizens Commission, which voters passed over a decade ago, is pretty popular. It led to districts that in many cases were competitive, which I think is good for democracy. So I think even people who voted yes yesterday had some mixed feelings about it, whether or not it's really good. Ultimately, down the road, it might be a good way to counter what Trump is doing in Texas and other states. There is a bit of irony, I think, for Republicans, a bit of maybe crocodile tears to be complaining about gerrymandering. Obviously, this was a reaction to what happened in Texas, after a push by President Trump to, in his words, to get five more seats that he's entitled to, in his words. So I think it does reflect, both of those comments from those elected officials reflect how their respective parties are feeling about this. Daryl Issa, of course, is one of the most endangered Republicans. His seat now is much more up in the air, much more purple. So it remains to be seen what he'll do, if he'll choose to run, if he'll retire, or just maybe run in a different district, which I don't think he'll do, although Ken Calvert, the Republican from the Inland Empire, Riverside County, is now going to switch and run against Young Kim, a pretty popular Republican Congress member from the LA Orange County area. So, you're going to see some Democrat or some Republican on Republican fights, I think, where incumbents are, trying to, extend their careers in Congress by running against each other.
Yeah. Well, this is being touted as a big win for Democrats, not just here in California, but in other places like New Jersey, Virginia, New York. Could it also be considered more of a rejection of Trump?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the governor's race in Virginia, I mean, no state, I think, is more affected by the DOGE cuts that Elon Musk carried out, as well as the government shutdown. There's a lot of, federal employees who live in Virginia. And it could have gone the other way. I mean, voters might have looked at all of that and thought, well, it's the Democrats' fault. I mean, that's what the Republicans have been saying, but clearly they didn't buy that. Abigail Spanberger, a member of Congress, who has a CIA background, national security credentials, very good in a state like Virginia, won by about 15 points. And then in New Jersey, Mikey Sherrill, who also is a former veteran, a Navy pilot, helicopter pilot, exceeded expectations last night. She won by about 13 percentage points over Jack Schiaparelli, who has run before. So I think, clearly we're seeing those kind of moderate voices being elevated in those states, even as Zoran Mamdani, who is a Democratic Socialist, winning, over former Democrat Andrew Cuomo. So I think what you're seeing is different kinds of candidates winning last night in different states, candidates who were tailored to the moment in their particular state or city.
Well, in your estimation, what do Democrats need to do now to connect with voters prior to the midterms?
Well, I think what we saw in, all those races is that the candidates matter. I don't think anyone really saw Mamdani coming. He was a 34-year-old assemblyman, not really somebody who was on most people's radar, but he was a charismatic candidate whose message resonated with young people and with people of color, people that the Democratic Party had a hard time getting to the polls on behalf of Kamala Harris last year. So I think that, that really is critical. Who gets recruited to run for these seats that the Democrats need to flip in the midterm elections? It really does matter. And I'm sure that the party and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is busy recruiting people now. Some have already come forward. to say that they're running. And that's going to lead to some pretty interesting primaries. For example, up in Maine, where you've got a 77-year-old popular Democratic governor running against a 40-something-year-old oyster farmer. Mm-hmm. So I think that question of generational change is going to loom large in the midterm elections, both in the primaries and also in the general come November of 2026.
Well, here in California, one person who's not running is Senator Alex Padilla. He said he's not going to run for governor in next year's race to succeed Gavin Newsom. Quickly, what are your takeaways from that?
Well, I think it was a very personal decision. You know, what I've heard is that, you know, he uprooted his family from L.A., moved them to Washington, and he's got three relatively young children who are apparently pretty happy living back there. And I think he probably got the message that he wanted to stay put. He's still pretty young, 52 years old, so he can keep his options open.
I've been speaking with Scott Schaefer. He is senior editor with the Politics and Government Desk at KQED in San Francisco. Scott, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for your insight.
Yeah, happy to do it.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfiresafety.